Wahino am Adonai Eloheinu Alenu Ma'asedenu Kununa Alenu Ma'asedenu Kununehu. Shalom, welcome everybody. We are continuing in our Shiurim in Sefer Daniel. We are beginning now in the fourth chapter. As you know, Daniel was taken into Babel as a young man, brought into the house of Nebuchadnezzar, was trained and educated in one of his wise men, has now risen to a very powerful position in the kingdom due to his abilities to understand and interpret dreams. In our previous lessons, we discussed those matters in detail. We learned about the miraculous salvation of Daniel's friends who were thrown into the pit of fire, and in that midst of that fire, while there were three people, there was a fourth one seen, a malach, an angel, an other than human being. And it is these other than human beings which permeate this book of Daniel more so than any of the other books of the Nevi'im. And of course, there is a great reason for this. And I have explained some of that material in our previous lessons. Let me repeat some of it now. During the days of Hashem's presence with the Jewish people, which was from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu pretty much until the days of the destruction of the temple, while Hashem was with us, we, the Jewish people, were in a relationship with Hashem, if you will, in a direct relationship. In the Kabbalistic terminology, it was a relationship called panim lepanim, generally speaking, meaning face to face. God dealt with man, man dealt with God, in a very personal and real and applicable day-to-day relationship. And all of our stories in the Tanakh, up until the times of the destruction, show us this. Now, during exile, there's a shift, there's a change. We symbolically state that God's face is turned away from Yisrael, as Yisrael's face is turned away from God. In the Kabbalistic language, we say now that the relationship is ach v'ach, meaning back to back, as opposed to what it was, face to face. Please remember, these are metaphorical terms. There's no face, there is no back. There are just words to help us describe a lessening, if you will, of the revelation of divine light. During this period of exile, where in which the divine light is greater concealed, what is revealed are those who God has in charge. We recognize from all the words of our holy sages, it's clear throughout the Tanakh, God runs his universe, if you will, as a king runs his court. There are emissaries, there are, if you will, governors, rulers, this in charge of that, this in charge of the other thing. Indeed, the Gemara teaches that there is not even a single blade of grass that does not have its own malach over it to make it grow. There is indeed this great, what I call a spiritual civil service of how things operate. And therefore, our universe is indeed a very, very busy place. And there is much communion and connection in the invisible world with the physical world. Unfortunately, our eyes are not geared towards seeing that, even though our minds indeed are, if we're able to focus our minds in that proper direction. Here, in the fourth parak of Daniel, we are exposed to teachings, realities which make it important for us to understand not only about the relationship between the physical and the spiritual, or if you will, the visible and invisible worlds, but how this technique, this means of communication, this method of union between them works and operates. Because as we shall see with regards to the story of King Nebuchadnezzar, what happens to him happens to all of us. And therefore, to help us understand the true nature of spiritual intervention in our lives for good or for evil, we must understand the nature of the reality of how the spiritual influences us. And by understanding this, we can better safeguard our souls, safeguard our minds, protect ourselves, to embrace ourselves in the paths of holiness, Torah, mitzvot, and to do the right thing before God. The fourth parak opens up with regards to Nebuchadnezzar. It's Nebuchadnezzar himself speaking. He says, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, was tranquil in my house. I flourished in my palace." In other words, he's saying, I'm at the top of the world. And now we had another dream. And this one, it says, frightened him. And the thoughts on his bed and the visions of his mind, it says here, terrified me, meaning him. So I issued an order to bring in before me all the wise men of Babel, that they should let me know the meaning of the dreams. And therefore he brought in his magicians, his astrologers, his Chaldim. We spoke about who the Chaldim were in our previous lesson. And interesting here, the translated term here is a demonologists, people who are able to speak with these otherworldly entities who inhabit our world. And obviously, these wise men of Babel knew the methods and techniques of how to communicate with these other entities, much of that which we will discuss now. Nebuchadnezzar says, "And I related my dream to them, but they did not tell me its meaning. Till at last Daniel, whose name is Belshazzar, like the name of my God, entered before me, and in whom is the spirit of holy angels. And I told him the dream. O Belshazzar, head of the magicians, since I know that the spirit of the holy angels is in you, and no secret is hidden from you, this is the vision of my dream that I saw. Now tell me its interpretation." Indeed, we see that Daniel not only has the ability to pull dreams out of the head of Nebuchadnezzar, he recognizes the concepts and understandings and meanings of dreams. And we have to understand what the value of a dream is. Let me quote to you just a little section here from the Zohar HaKadosh. Actually, it's referenced in the Sefer Pitron Chalamot, the Interpretations of Dreams, by Rabbi Al-Moli, the old 16th century dream manual, according to our sages. The Zohar states, "Come and see. There is nothing which comes to the world without having been announced in a dream or by means of a messenger, as it is taught. Everything is announced in heaven before it comes to the world. From there it spreads through the world and is given over by a messenger, as it is written that Hashem does nothing without revealing his secrets to his servants, the prophets, at the time when there were prophets. And even when prophetic inspiration is lacking, there are sages who are superior to prophets. And even when no dream is granted, matters are revealed and ordained through what's called here the birds of heaven." Now, this section of the Zohar is revealing many secrets. I have a number of lessons that I have done in the past from the Sha'ar Ruach HaKodesh of the Arizal, speaking about how certain means and methods of spiritual communication is accomplished, specifically those referenced in the Zohar here about the birds of heaven and the like. I will reference you to that material on our website, koshertorah.com. I want to focus here with importance of understanding the nature of dreams. Pharaoh in Egypt had dreams, and Joseph interpreted them for him. A dream is a communication. It is a message. Nothing happens here on earth without it being known prior in the realm of the unconscious, that which we call dreams. And especially leaders, political leaders, which in our case would include presidents and prime ministers. Elohim, that aspect and face of God, which was revealed, if you will, through nature, speaks to them and somehow reveals to them that which is to be. So even peoples like the President of the United States, prime ministers of England and the like, indeed have a spiritual connection predicated based upon their office, not their person, through which they receive information. Nebuchadnezzar is only common in this sense. This then was Nebuchadnezzar's dream. I was looking, behold, there was a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was tremendous. The tree grew and became strong, and its height reached the sky, and its appearance was seen to the end of all the earth. Its branches were beautiful, and its fruit was plentiful, and on it was sustenance for all. Under it the beasts of the field took shade, and in its branches dwelt the birds of the heavens, and all flesh was nourished from it. I saw in the visions of my mind on my bed, and behold, an Ir Wakadish came down from heaven, translated here as a wakeful holy one. These are the ones that are translated in other places as a watcher. These are the angels of eyes, whose job it is to intervene with man, who always are watching, always involved. They are called the Ir Wakadish, wakeful and holy. Some are in the interpretation that there are two different levels here. Some are interpretation there's one. Doesn't really matter for the sake of our story here. Let's continue. This Ir, this one of the Irin now, comes down from heaven, crying out loudly and said, cut down the tree and cut off its branches. Shake off its branches and scatter its fruit. The beasts shall wander away from beneath it, and the birds from its branches. But leave its main roots in the ground, and in fetters of iron and copper in the grass of the field. With the dew of the heaven it shall be drenched. With the beasts shall be its lot in the grass of the earth. They will change his heart from a man's, and the heart of a beast will be given him. And 7 periods will pass over him. Now here is the disturbing part. Begizrat irin pitkama, umaamar kadishim shalta. By the decree of the watchers is this matter, and by the word of the holy ones is the edict, in order that the living should know that the Most High rules over the kingdom of man, and to whom he wishes he gives it, and the lowest of men he sets upon it. Before I comment and describe this, let's finish the dream, and then we'll discuss all things at once. This is the dream that I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen, and you, Belshazzar, tell me its interpretation, since all the wise men of my kingdom cannot let me know the interpretation. But you can, because the spirit of the holy angels is in you. Then Daniel, whose name is Belshazzar, was bewildered for a while, and his thoughts alarmed him. The king spoke up and said, Belshazzar, let the dream and its interpretation not alarm you. Belshazzar answered and said, my lord, may the dream be for your enemies, and its interpretation for your foes. The tree that you saw, which grew and became strong, and whose height reached the sky, and whose appearance was seen in the earth, and whose branches were beautiful, and whose fruit was plentiful, and on which was sustained for all, under which dwelt the beasts of the field, and the branches dwelt the birds of the heaven. This is you, O king. For you have become great and strong, and your greatness has increased and reached the heaven, and your dominion extends to the end of the earth. And what the king saw, a Ir Wakadish, a watcher from heaven, who said, cut down the tree and destroy it, leave its main roots in the ground, and chain him with fetters of iron and copper in the grass of the fields. And with the dew of the heavens he shall be drenched. With the beasts of the field shall be his lot, till 7 periods pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and it is the decree of the Most High which befalls my lord the king. And they will banish you from mankind, and your dwelling will be with the beasts of the field. And they will feed you grass like the cattle. And with the dew of the heavens you shall be drenched. And 7 periods shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules over the kingdom of men, and to whom he wishes he gives it. And what they said to leave, the main root of the tree, your kingdom will remain yours, as soon as you know that heaven rules. Okay, We'll continue in this story, but here first we must discuss two things. Interestingly, what happens to King Nebuchadnezzar is a serious and significant loss of his sanity. Indeed, the Encyclopedia Judaica, as well as the American Journal of Psychiatry in a similar review, define Nebuchadnezzar's illness as something which is called lycanthropy. Lycanthropy is a psychological illness which became famous in a 1930s Hollywood film starring Lon Chaney. And I'm referring to The Wolfman. We've all heard of werewolves. Did you realize that werewolfism is actually a real psychiatric illness? Let's discuss this, and then we'll proceed to understand some things. Lycanthropy is a psychotic ailment. It affects people's minds. It can turn them from a man to a beast. And indeed, as we proceed in our story, we're going to learn this is exactly what happens to King Nebuchadnezzar. I'm going to read to you now just a little bit about lycanthropy from the American Journal of Psychiatry, from volume 134, number 10. It was published in October 1977. It's called The Case of Lycanthropy. In other words, werewolfism. No, it's not like all of a sudden the full moon comes out and you grow hair and you howl at the moon and go around and kill people and you get shot with a silver bullet and you die. Of course, that's all Hollywood. But the real mental illness that afflicted Nebuchadnezzar has afflicted others over the centuries. Quoting from the American Journal of Psychiatry, it states that lycanthropy is a psychosis in which the patient has delusions of being a wild animal. It says here, usually a wolf, and has been recorded since antiquity. The Book of Daniel describes King Nebuchadnezzar as suffering from depression that deteriorated over a seven-year period into a frank psychosis of which he imagined himself a wolf. It says here that there are other examples of this in both Greek and Roman times. They make an interesting statement here that many medieval theologians envisioned lycanthropy as a consequence of the evil eye, Ayin Hara. Now, evil eye, our sages teach in the Gemara that 9 out of 10 people die because of the influence of evil eye. Now, evil eye is not the physical eye that looks upon someone, but the inner eye which projects the essence and energy of an individual upon another, which can influence and harm them at an unconscious psychological level, of which we will discuss as we proceed. Continuing from the American Journal of Psychiatry discussing lycanthropy, delusions of being a wolf or some other feared animal are universal. And although rare in the industrialized countries, this nonetheless still occurs in places like China, India, Africa, Central and South America. The animals in the delusioned transformation include leopards, lions, elephants, crocodiles, sharks, buffaloes, eagles, and serpents. Not infrequently, bizarre and chaotic sexuality is expressed in a primitive way through the lycanthropic symptom complex. Patients whose internal fears exceed their coping mechanisms may externalize them via projection and constitute a serious threat to others. Throughout the ages, such individuals have been feared because of their tendencies to commit bestial acts and were themselves hunted and killed by the populace. Many of these people were paranoid schizophrenics. And they give here a case report, which I'm not going to read all the details, just some points here. About a 49-year-old married woman presented an urgent basis for psychiatric evaluation because of delusions of being a wolf and feeling like an animal with claws. She kept on saying a voice was coming out of her. The patient chronically ruminated and dreamed about wolves. So in essence, this didn't just befall her. It was something that grew in time, taking over the conscious, healthy psyche, causing it this blur of consciousness between what we know as reality and illusion. She would say, I am what I am, and I will always roam the earth long after death. The woman would gaze in a mirror and see the head of a wolf in place of a face in her own body. A long-nosed wolf with teeth, groaning, snarling, growling with fangs and claws, calling out, I am the devil. Interesting. They reviewed her psychologically and with intelligence testing, emotional testings. And apparently she was otherwise a relatively normal individual. Make an interesting point here that the people who suffer from this seem to have some type of preoccupation with religious phenomenology, including feelings of being victimized by the evil eye. Here, then, is the key for understanding this material. We're taught in a pasuk, which we recite daily in the Kiryat Shema, Lo taturu acharei lavavechem, acharei anechem, asheretim zonim acharehem. Do not follow your eyes and your heart that will lead you astray. Right? Don't follow your eyes and your heart. Meaning, our sages say that nothing gets into the heart which first does not enter the eye. In other words, you have to see it first in order to crave it and to desire it. And once something enters into the heart, this is then when the problems begin. And this you must understand now is the relationship between the physical and the spiritual and how things can influence us. Because an illness like lycanthropy that takes down a mighty world leader like Nebuchadnezzar and affects and influences people today is a psychic, a spiritual thing that happens. As it clearly stated here in the 14th Pasuk, by the decree of the watchers is this matter, and by the word of the holy ones is the edict. While God ordains this, they are the ones who carry out the order. What do they do? How do the angels drive someone insane? And don't dare misinterpret this pasuk, because it says clearly that this is exactly what they did. They drove him insane. This is a punishment for sin that God inflicts upon us, mental illness. But how does this happen? It can only happen when one's psychological framework is open to receive such a thing. And the Irin are over this world to fulfill the edicts of their Lord to bring these things to pass. Before I continue to discuss how this is done, let us first identify more about who these Irin are, the watchers. Daniel is not the only one to mention the watchers. In a large genre of Jewish literature, which was written after Daniel, called Merkava literature, apocalyptic literature, much of which we find in the Dead Sea Scrolls, the books of Hanoch, Enoch, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, these watchers are described in great detail. A group of them are referred to as the Bnei Elohim, the sons of God, who in Genesis 6 fell from heaven, came down and took the daughters of men, from which were born giants. These fallen angels are a portion of a group of angels who were referred to by a very mysterious name in the Sefer Yetzirah in the 6th Perek, and they are called the Tili. In the 6th chapter of the Sefer Yetzirah, it speaks of these mysterious Tili in a very, very bizarre lashon, a very peculiar language. And I'll read to you what it says here. The Tili are in the universe like a king on its throne. A king on his throne is one who rules or dictates. The identity of the Tali is discussed and given many, many different interpretations. The word Tali itself, as defined in many places by the Gaon of Vilna in his commentary to the Sefer Yetzirah, is a reptilian, or more accurately, a dragon. These watcher angels, who are also known as the Tali, are known as the dragons. They're called the fallen angels in Genesis 6. And it's no coincidence now that another fallen angel we found back in the Garden of Eden in the form of the Nahash, a serpent, a dragon. And it is because of the nature and element of these, in quotes, dragons, and their negative influence and interactions with man, from Adam in the Garden of Eden to the sons of God who took the daughters of men, that our sages in Masechet Avodah Zarah say that any image of the Draco, the dragon, is idolatry. Know then that these Irin, not all of them are bad, there's a lot of them which are good. Our sages discuss in their commentaries here in Daniel that the Irin are not known as these nice guys, but as angels, actually we call Malachei Chabalah, the angels who bring destruction. They're not evil, they're emissaries of God. But they're emissaries of God in this time of exile, in this world of Asiyah of ours. And therefore, they bring with them judgment. That is the nature of their essence. Rabbi Arya Kaplan makes an interesting comment with regards to the Tali in his commentary to the Sefer Yetzirah. On the bottom of page 236, he makes a reference to the opinion of the practical Kabbalists. Those are the meditative Kabbalists who know the means of interaction, who do not discuss things theoretically, but have experiential knowledge. They write, quoting here Kaplan, that the Tali is actually a place under the firmament of the Vilon, and that it is inhabited by humanoid beings, which deport themselves in holiness and purity like angels. The divine mysteries are revealed to these beings, and they have the authority to reveal these things to mortal humans. Methods are also given whereby these beings can be contacted. And you're going to say, oh boy, let's go contact these beings. Let's talk to them and see what they have to say. Well, don't be in such a rush. Sometimes what they have to say might not be what you want to hear. I am sure that what they had to say to Nebuchadnezzar was not necessarily so welcomed and received by him. Understand now that we as human beings in our present fallen state are so much lower than where we once were as humans before the Chet of Adam. Very, very few are those who are so kadosh that they can rise to the level of being a Navi, a Tzaddik, a Kadosh, where in which they can indeed stand amongst the angels. And there are, in every generation, holy Rabbanim, Tzaddikim Kodeshim, who indeed aspire and do accomplish to achieve such a standing. But woe to the rest of us who daily struggle with the ins and outs of daily life. Because in the eyes of these malachim, we are nothing more than like cattle. Because we don't live a life of kiddushah, we don't emphasize and focus our minds on Talmud Torah to rip apart this veil of illusion, which is our physical world, to penetrate into the truth and reality of spiritual life, the likes which Daniel did, sacrificing, endangering his life for the truth that he knew, which enabled him to stand up. Woe to us. Woe to us that we have to be convinced to do Torah mitzvot. Rabbi, give me a reason why I have to do this. Why should I do that? There's no whys. Yours is not to question why. yours is but to do. Period. That is the surrender to Hashem that the Malachim, the Irin, watch to see. Understand now the ways and methods of how we as human beings operate. From our physical point of view, we are a body, but our souls are manifest through our brains, as we know. And in order to understand how the spiritual works, how we work, we must understand the operation and functions of the brain. The brain, as we know, operates by, if you will, in four general patterns of brainwaves, brainwave activity. And the modern science gives them four names. They call it the beta state, the alpha state, the theta state, and the delta state, based upon the Greek letters. And they give the measurements at cycles of amplitude of how the brains work at each level. Now, the cycles here of how the brain wave functions, these numbers are arbitrary because any system of measurement, by definition, is arbitrary. When you want to say that the brain operates at 15 or 40 cycles per second, well, what's a cycle? What's a second? These are man-made measurements, and therefore, we should not attempt to apply any deeper meaning to these numbers any more than we would, for example, endeavor to apply numbers to temperature. For example, water freezes at 32 degrees. Well, 32 is a significant number, right? Well, and then the Fahrenheit scale, is it? At centigrade, it's zero. All right, so it's different numbers, different ways of measuring. They are abstract. They have nothing to do with the state of the reality of the issue. The state of the reality of the issue is the human mind can be seen to work in four ways. And these four ways are important for us to understand because indeed they do correspond to, if you will, the four Kabbalistic worlds of Asiya, Yetzirah, Birya, and Atzilut, and how our minds interact with each of these levels as these levels are manifest here within our Asiatic world. That level of the brain, which we are most familiar with, I'm reading to you here from some scientific material, the frequency of beta waves. It says here they at 15 to 40 cycles a second. This beta waves are characteristic of a strongly engaged mind. A person in active conversation would be in beta. Someone who is in debate would be in a high beta. A person making a speech or a teacher or a talk show host would all be in beta when they are engaged in their work. Now, the beta brainwave range, as we said, it corresponds to the fully active conscious state of mind. The next state is called the alpha brainwaves. They're slower, but they're higher in amplitude. They range from the 9 to 14 cycles per second. So a person who has completed a task and sits down to rest is often in an alpha state. A person who takes time out to reflect or meditate is usually in an alpha state. A person who takes a break from a conference and walks in the garden is also in an alpha state. The theta level, again, 5 to 8 cycles a second. A person who is driving on a freeway and discovers that they can't recall the last 5 miles is often in a theta state, induced by the process of freeway driving. The repetitious nature of that form of driving compared to a country road would differentiate a theta state and a beta state in order to perform the driving task safely. Individuals who do a lot of freeway driving often get good ideas during these periods when they are in theta, or I should say here, because they're in theta. The theta brainwaves here, he says here, is like a deep trance-like meditation, more like daydreaming. We're having a light sleep. And this exactly is appropriate here. When we are driving in long sections of highway, as the example given here, we're operating from a subconscious part of the mind that is filled with psychic energy that is not readily available to the conscious mind. I'll give an example. Many a time I drive cross country. And I know the times that I drive cross country, I can literally go for hours and hours and hours on end, and it appears to me as if nothing. And I could ask myself, did I pass this and that exit? Did I pass this and that marker? And I know I did, but I don't actually remember doing it. There was actually one time I remember many years ago that I was very, very tired. It was very late at night. And I was driving a distance of about an hour, hour and a half. And I got to my location and suddenly clicked and snapped and said, you know something? I don't remember driving. How did I get here? I know I did it, but I had actually no conscious recognition of what I had done. I'd driven almost unconsciously. How can you drive unconsciously? Well, I knew the route. Something in my mind, an altered state was going on, which was taking over almost automatically, enabling me to proceed. There's a fourth level, and that's called the delta brainwave range. It's from the 1.5 to 4 cycles per second, and this occurs in a deep sleep. It's in this state that the individual is using the unconscious part of the mind, where archetypal images are stored. The psychologist who did most work in uncovering archetypal image patterns that influence human behavior, of course, was Carl Jung. Now, Carl Jung analyzed the spiritual phenomena that people experience, and he connected it with these archetypal patterns embedded in the human unconscious. And it says here in this book that I'm reading from, it says here, is lending support to the view that spiritual experiences occur when delta brainwaves are stimulated. In delta state, one loses consciousness of what is occurring around them, and there is no memory of activities performed. So although one or more of these brainwave states may occur simultaneously, normally one state is dominant at any time. Now here is what we must understand. Our physical world is perceived by us through the levels of consciousness, which we know as the beta and alpha states. The more we are conscious, the more we are drawn towards our physical environment, our interactions with the physical world. But as we have learned in numerous places, there are other levels, other realities in life, in our universe, in our world, which is not open to beta or alpha connection. In order to connect to these other realms, kind of like with glasses, just like if you want to look at something, you have to put on maybe a pair of glasses or something to get a clearer look. So it is with the mind. You have to change your shift and focus of consciousness to get a better look. It's kind of like, if you will, to describe it on a surface level, the difference between an extrovert and an introverted personality. So, one in conscious mind is always involved with the outer world. In the prophetic tradition, you are taught to cultivate control and awareness of your theta and delta states, which science teaches clearly are unconscious. They are unconscious because they do not deal with the conscious world, but they exist and are real in their own world. We humans think at all different levels, but when we are shifting from one level to another, our mode of thinking, our mode of world experience shifts along with us. When you're in beta state, you're in this world. When you are in delta state, you are in a different world. Your means of communication are different. Your means of reality and experience of said reality is different. I might state that these malachim in the other worlds of Asiya do not think in beta and alpha forms as do we, but rather in delta state, because that is their normal mode of operation. That is their normal place. Their form and structure of space is different from ours. And they therefore exist in what we call the dream world. And that is why, if one wishes to commune with these entities, one enters into a dream, as did Nebuchadnezzar, as does Daniel, as does Yosef, as does our sages, as does our prophets, where God says clearly, if I am going to speak to a prophet, I'll come to him in a vision of the night. So we see clearly that the spiritual means of communication is through the dream state, which is the delta state of consciousness. Indeed, throughout the teachings of the prophetic Kabbalah, which is very different indeed from the theoretical Kabbalah taught in most places today, one is taught how to cultivate, experience, and grasp and embrace Delta consciousness, which we might refer to by its appropriate Kabbalistic name, Atzilutic consciousness. The entire first chapter of Sefer Yetzirah is actually a method and a technique how to cultivate Theta and Delta consciousness and to embrace their meanings in beta and alpha states, thus to merge the worlds. In my commentary to Sefer Yetzirah, I do not follow the Kaplan view or the theoretical view of things. I explain the practical meditative device so as to enable one to understand how the mind works and how the mind can be used in the service of our blessed Creator. Now understand what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, as we see, is a man of dreams. The watchers commune with us through the world of dreams. They can touch the mind. They can change the mind. They can influence the mind. They can take the beta and alpha states, which are like the tip of an iceberg lying on top of the great vast theta and delta states. And they can commune through those theta and delta states, shifting the mind, twisting it, turning it, removing it even, to the point where one loses their beta and alpha connection. This is what we call in psychology psychosis. A psychotic, one who's crazy, right? We say, oh, he's crazy. What's crazy? Oh, he's hearing voices, he's seeing things. And how do you know that what he sees is not there? How do you know what he hears is not there? I'll bet you in most cases there really is something there. No, not a pink elephant flying with wings, but rather, understand now the nature of the human mind between the conscious and the unconscious. God has blessed us with a very strong demarcation between our conscious and our unconscious, between our beta-alpha state and our delta-theta state, because the two exist in universes that are operated by different laws of physics. As we see clearly, our dream world and our physical worlds operate by totally different parameters of definitions of reality. What happens when the two are blurred? And when one cannot clearly distinguish between the dream state and the conscious state? That which comes in from the dream state, which is and can be very real. permeates the mind. And one of weakened mind cannot tell the difference between the physical person who was standing there and the impression or the image of the spiritual entity that is standing there. And indeed, both are seen together. We'll learn in a later chapter of Daniel that indeed he has a vision where he sees Malachim and others who are in his presence, who our sages tell us were actually prophets, did not. They were aware something was going on, but they didn't see it. Daniel did. Modern psychiatrists might say he's having delusions. But is he really? Understand now that the Irin penetrated the mind of Nebuchadnezzar and broke down his consciousness. As it says, removed from him the heart of man and gave him the heart of a beast. They took away his beta and alpha state. And he existed in a dream world where he could not tell the difference between what was and what was not. And God ordained this for him so that this mighty man who stood as the king of the world, the destroyer of the holy house in Jerusalem, should know that it was not by his might and by his hand that his most precious possession, his sanity, is always in the hands of another. We must learn this lesson too. When modern psychiatric reports show that 1 out of 5 Americans, that's 60 million human beings, are suffering from psychological and mental illness, that indeed we are being punished. As the psychiatry recognizes, they say, there's a connection with the evil eye. And I have taught you about the dangers of the evil eye. I have a lesson on it, the dangers of the ayin hara, the evil eye. Learn from that lesson about the true nature of how the projection from the essence and depths of one's soul, one's theta and delta states of consciousness, project from one. They're brainwaves. They go out from us. And they are received at the delta and theta state by others. In other words, whatever we are unconsciously thinking, we are projecting out at every moment. And it has an unconscious influence upon like minds, because that is how those things travel. So when you're sitting there fantasizing about something evil, you bring like mind to it. You strengthen evil. And that is why our sages say in Masechet Yuma that the thought of sin is even a greater blemish than the act. The act comes and goes. The thought continues. Clarity of mind, our sages always tell us. I have people come to me, Rabbi, I want to talk to the angels. I snicker. I say under my breath, no, you don't. Let me tell you something about the Tili. They are not to be messed with. They are indeed golden dragons. They are powerful beyond what you can possibly imagine. And they serve their creator well. And they don't like to be bothered. If they have a message for you, they'll come to you. But you don't go running after them like a little interesting child. It's like a 2 or 3 year old bursting into a very important business meeting. Abba, Abba, I want to see what's going on here. Abba's going to scorch you out, but if you keep making a fit, you're going to get a spanking. You're going to be put in your room. Metaphorically speaking, of course. Understand now that when one wishes to approach the spiritual, you do so through your mind. The delta states of consciousness must be cultivated so that when you are in dream state, your dreams are pure, your dreams are refined because your heart follows your eyes, both the holiness, which is why our sages say, guard what you see with your eyes. Every time you are watching a program on television or a movie which contains imagery which is contraindicative to your state of holiness, that image can come back and haunt you. 10, 20, 30 days, months, years to come after you. That is why in our dreams we see bizarre and strange things. We say, where did that come from? It has come into you. It has infected you. Indeed, psychology deals with these things on a regular basis, and they are very dangerous. In psychology, they're called autonomous complexes. And quoting here from a book on Jungian psychology, an excellent, excellent Jungian psychology book by Marie-Louise von Franz. It's called Projection and Recollection in Jungian Psychology, Reflections of the Soul. On page 103, she states that these blemishes, what she calls here an autonomous complex, it behaves exactly like a virus that can warp or destroy the entire personalities. Viruses, we know, are dead matter, she says. It's only a living creature that acquires a quasi-life. The same is true of autonomous complexes in the mind. They take all the life out of the person, and when they have eaten him up, they become entangled with life in the surrounding environment. And that is why when in the vicinity of people who are possessed, yeah, that's the word she uses, one often experiences a sudden fatigue and an inexplicable feeling of having one's vitality sucked out. Understand now the nature and means of how this happens. And understand that this same means can be used for Kedusha, holiness, or it can be used to bring us down. One of the ways and means of communications with holiness, with the Tili, is a direct exchange of information, if you will, through your emotions. It's an empathic connection. It's based upon your purification and relationship to the Sefirot, because this is how they communicate. It's like a gestalt-like knowing, all right? It's intuition. Chokhmah. And from what I've understood from my studies, it is apparently the way that whales and dolphins communicate with us. It is alleged that with regards to spiritual entities, you can always tell the difference between a good one and a bad one, because both times when you have a connection with a spiritual entity, being that they're communicating in delta waves, it's always in a dreamlike state. It's always fuzzy. It's hazy. It's not clear like a beta connection, because it's not. And therefore, when you are with a Kadosh entity, somehow they have the power to project through the delta and theta states, that you can grasp it into your beta state and understand it. This is Ruach HaKodesh. This is how David HaMelech wrote the Tehillim, and how, if you will, Daniel wrote this book. Whereas others who get fuzzy and unclear images, like psychics, like channelers, they don't know who they're speaking with. Indeed, remember that there are those of the Tali who fell, who came to earth. So not all are in the image of good, but there is bad. And so, in conclusion to this section, let me emphasize and again, emphasize, what more can I say? Be careful when you proceed in meditative states. When you pursue things like music, which opens you up to deeper states of consciousness, where they take you. Be aware of everything that you expose your mind to, your eyes to. Where you think, there you are. Great teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. Very unpraised master of the prophetic tradition. Understand then that the Irin, penetrated the mind of Nebuchadnezzar because of his arrogance and broke him down step by step, inch by inch, until finally he snapped. And their method, their purpose, their plan was put into action. This happens to you and to me on a daily basis, based upon our embrace of or rejection of the Word of God walking in His way.
This concludes this recording. Please go to the next one now.